Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers only. No parking in the White Zone. Thank you.
It's actually a Baggage Claim Thursday. It's a special playoff Baggage Claim edition. I'm Buster Olney, and you can hear I am at the Minneapolis airport. It's Thursday, October 5th, 2023. Taylor, Sarah, Bruce are all back in Connecticut. We are recovering after the first 2 days of the playoffs. I did the Marlins and Phillies series on television, but my series was like every other series. Man. Taylor, that was quick.
Yeah, man. We were chatting. You know, people are like, oh, you root against this team. You root for that team. We root for sweeps here in the media just to make things a little bit cleaner. So while I wish we would have had a game three for the drama and the excitement for something to talk about, the sweeps are fine with me.
All right. I've got a theory why we had 4-2-0 sweeps. I'm going to share with Jeff Passan coming up. But I'm curious, Taylor, we'll start with you. Get a theory from each one of you why we're seeing 2-0 series.
These games are just hard to win. It's hard to win a three-game series. The pressure is immense. You lose the first game, and I feel like everything goes out the window for that team that needs to make up that second one. So I just think it's hard. You got to win your division. Got to get one of those top two seeds.
Sarah, was it 2-0 in Philadelphia because of you and all your Philadelphia cohorts?
Yes, it was all because of me, I must say. They have the power of Taylor Swift and Miles Teller on their side, and that's really tough to beat. It's really tough to beat.
Bruce, what do you got?
I don't know. It feels like there's something in the air.
Okay, that's what your guys' theories are. I've got a distinct theory, as I mentioned. I'm going to be sharing it with Jeff Passan coming up. But first, let's go back through highlights from last night's games, yesterday's games in Philadelphia. The Phillies playing the Marlins. The Marlins down 1-0 coming in. And, man, top of third inning, it felt like John Birdie made a big mistake.
He looks at second. And now Birdie goes to third. The throw to third. Wow. Boehm is there. He makes the tag, and they got him.
Wow.
Easy as that. Birdie thought he had Nola Ren, and he said, uh-uh. I got the answer here. That's out number two of the inning. And a runner in scoring position wiped away.
Yeah, Aaron Nola spun out. And Rob Thompson later during the broadcast explained they've been working on a lot of plays with the pitchers, trying to get him ready for postseason with the managers potentially being more aggressive with these new stolen base rules. Kyle Schwarber gave the Phillies a lead in the bottom of the third.
1-1 to Schwarber. Swinging a hard grounder down the first baseline. That's a fair ball rolling all the way to the corner. Pache from first, heading to third. He gets the green light from Dusty Wathen. The relay throw does not come home. Pache scores.
And JT Realmuto added to the lead in the bottom of the fourth.
The 2-2 pitch. Uh-oh. Hit high in the air out to deep left field, and we've got our first home run in Philadelphia in the 2023 postseason. JT Realmuto, a solo shot to lead off the fourth, and it's 3-0 Phillies.
And Bryson Stott put the game away in the bottom of the sixth.
A lefty, Nardi on the mound. His pitch, swinging a high fly out toward right field. Sanchez watches as it sails over the wall for a grand slam. Bryson Stott into the seats in right field. And here in the bottom of the sixth, as fireworks ignite in the night sky.
And right after, man, these highlights, Taylor, they're cutting off so quick.
I know. Our friends in radio screening had an itchy trigger finger here, but I think we get the point across.
Man, just like boom, drop at the end of the word. All right, in the midst of the game, I spoke with Aaron Nola, the Phillies starting pitcher who worked 7 great innings.
Aaron, what do you feel like you did well tonight?
I feel like I filled the zone up. Defense was great behind me. Big double plays tonight, which helped out a lot, especially when the leadoff guy got on. But for the most part, got ahead of the guys. Felt like first pitch strike was there for the most part. But try to make pitches as best as possible when I needed to.
Staff arranged a lot of rest for you guys in the last 6 weeks of the season. Tell me how different you feel this year compared to last year as the playoffs begin.
I feel good. Physically, I feel good. I know that we brought a 6-man rotation in after the All-Star break and wanted to give us more rest. But I feel good. I feel like our staff feels good going into the postseason, especially the wild card. And I mean, we still want to throw deep in the games to get these bullpen guys fresh, keep them fresh all postseason, and hopefully we can make a good run.
So the Phillies overwhelmed the Marlins 7-1 and sweep the series 2-0. Afterward, Rob Thompson talked about the impact of Stott's grand slam.
Probably a lot. You know, he'd been struggling coming up to the last day in New York, the last game of the regular season. He'd been struggling a little bit. But to get the ball in the air and hit a home run, because he hadn't hit a home run in a while, I think it was big for him. And the ovation he got, his next at bat was spectacular.
Skip Schumacher, the Marlins manager, knows moving forward that the Marlins will grow from these two games.
I think the culture changed. I believe that there's a new standard in that clubhouse now, and now it's up to them to protect that standard, honestly. And I think those guys are now understanding what winning looks like and should look like. And it was a really fun year. I mean, I grew a lot as a person, as a coach. Met a lot of good people, new people in baseball, and just really fell in love with those guys. The sad part about it is, because it's baseball, you're not going to see all the same people in spring training, right? And that's what sucks, because I came to the field every day away from my family, but so grateful to be a part of another family.
Yeah, I think Skip Schumacher is one of the best managers in baseball already. He is a sharp guy, and he's going to have a lot of success in his career in that spot. The Diamondbacks led the Brewers 1-0 going into the game on Wednesday. Ketel Marte gave the Diamondbacks a lead in the top of the sixth.
3-2. Swing and a liner back up the middle and through for a hit. Skipped under the glove of Peralta. Perdomo is in. Here comes Carroll. He scores, and taking second is Marte. And the Diamondbacks have taken the lead. 3-2 Arizona.
Roxy Bernstein, ESPN Radio. Here was the final call of that series.
The 0-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out with a sweeper. The Diamondbacks have won the series. Arizona has closed out the NL Central, winning Brewers in comeback fashion each of the two games in Milwaukee, and they sweep this best-of-three wildcard series, and Paul Sewald gets the save for the second consecutive game.
So I'm going to give you a couple of versions of Torrey Lovello, who is a great guy, and then when you speak to him away from the ballpark, he's so understated, so polite. Here's Torrey Lovello being very understated, talking about how his team grew over the last 5-6 years he's managed the Diamondbacks.
You lump up the last 6 years and, you know, consider what we've walked through and the dark times that we had. This is a pretty special moment. There's a lot of emotion inside of this organization, inside of this clubhouse right now. 2017 was a magical year. We had some great players, and, you know, it was just a different time. And the players that have cycled through our system, that have learned our values, and you know, morals, are here on this stage performing. It makes it a little bit more special. I've known these kids for 5 or 6 years as they've been developing into the system, and it is a true connection. That's what I'm thinking about right now when I get asked the question, what's the difference between last time, this time, with the 6 years? It's the dark times coming out the other end and then celebrating with kids that I've watched basically grow up right before my very eyes.
That's Torrey Lovello outside of the clubhouse. Here's Torrey Lovello inside the clubhouse after the Diamondbacks swept the series.
Are you kidding me? Listen, this is part of the journey. We're not there yet. Let's enjoy it. Let's embrace it. Let's party. And a connected team is a dangerous team. We are dangerous. Let's party.
Oh, I love it so much. It is so much fun. That's awesome that Torrey had that. Craig Counsell, the Brewers manager. We've talked about him being one of the premier free agents in the market this fall. His contract is set to expire, and he was asked about that after yesterday's loss.
Craig, is there any sort of timeline on your decision for your future? Do you have to know by
soon? That ain't for tonight, man.
That ain't for tonight. All right, the Twins face the Blue Jays. The Twins having won game one. And Carlos Correa, who just loves to play in October, gave the Twins a lead in the bottom of the fourth.
They've got a man at every base and the 1-0. Swing and a line drive. Base hit. Past the shortstop in the left center field. Lewis is in to score. Kepler down to third as the throw comes in. Correa rips a single, and Minnesota leads it 1-0.
So Carlos Correa, I think this is right, scored a 1580 on his SATs. This is a smart dude. And in the top of the fifth inning, the Blue Jays had second and third and two outs. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on second. And Carlos Correa put on a pickoff play. This is what happened.
Play on at second. Here's the throw, the tag, and wow. Guerrero is out! On the back pick, they got him!
How does that happen? Vladimir Guerrero getting picked off in that situation with a runner at third base when they're down two runs. We're going to be talking about that with Jeff Passan coming up. The next inning, Toronto had a chance to score. Matt Chapman at the plate. This is what happened.
Big spot to show here, the 1-1. Swing and a ground ball to short. Correa to Julian at second, one on to first. Got him, double play. And the Twins get out of it. A 6-4-3 bases loaded inning ending double play.
Yeah, this is what it sounded like in the ninth inning.
They are one strike away from moving on in the postseason. The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. It's over. The Twins are on to the division series.
After the game, Carlos Correa spoke with Aldin Gonzalez.
Hey, Carlos, it's been 21 years since this franchise has won a playoff round. You were brought here to deliver moments like this. How does it feel to see this come to fruition?
It feels amazing, man. It feels amazing. You know, to get that first win in a long time yesterday was special, but to get this win right here and move on to the next round, it feels amazing. You know, we're going to go to Houston. Obviously, they got a great team over there. And we're going to play our best baseball, man. This feels really good.
Carlos, this team has gotten a lot of contributions from young players, less heralded players. What do you think people should know about this group and what makes it so special?
Well, it's a young, talented group, man, that really wants it. Right? I tell everybody, this reminds me a lot of the 15 Astros when the young talent came up, matched up with the veterans that were there already, and then they started going off. So that's how I feel about this organization or the squad that we have right now. If you look at our young players, they're going to be here for a long time. Me, Boston, Royce, all the guys are going to be here for a long time, and we're going to build something special.
You said it earlier, the Astros are next. I think you're kind of familiar with them. What do you think about that matchup?
Just a little bit familiar with that ballpark and that team. You know, they know what to do in postseason baseball, and that's something we preach here in this clubhouse. You know, when the moment comes, you got to be ready and prepared. And if you're prepared, you're going to have the confidence to go out there and do your job, and that's what we're doing.
Carlos, thanks so much. Congratulations.
Sonny Gray was in the Twins press conference after the game, and he was asked about Carlos Correa putting on that pickoff play.
I said, "Who you put that on? Did you put that on?" "Yeah, let away." And he said, "No, Carlos put that on." And I said, "No cuss word." So for him to have the awareness earlier in the game to say, "Hey, this is an option. This is there for us." And then in a moment like that, to have the awareness to relay it from shortstop to the dugout and the dugout to relay it into the pitch comms. For me, it was just about executing a play. But for him to have that awareness is what makes him special.
My man, Sonny Gray, Vanderbilt product, great guy from Tennessee, needs to talk to Torrey Lovello about letting it fly, Taylor, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he should have let the cuss word fly. He censored himself. No need for that. You're a winner.
Oh, man. Well, after the game, of course, John Schneider, the Blue Jays manager, was asked a question about Vladimir Guerrero getting picked off at second.
Yeah, it's tough. You get arguably, you know, probably your best hitter at the plate. Sonny's at the end of his pitch count, probably his last hitter. yeah, it's tough. It's tough, you know. As much as we talk about it, you know, we've talked about it since February 14th. I think that we can all look each other in the face and say collectively we fell short of executing what we wanted to do. So it's not for a lack of information or prep. In that moment, that can't happen.
The Rangers, the Rays having lost game one of this series, and in the top of the fourth inning, the Rangers took it to Tampa Bay.
The 1-1. Garcia swings, launches, left field. Arozarena looks up, and it's gone! Adolis Garcia unloads to left, and the Rangers strike first in the fourth on a solo shot in game two. His 3-2. Young swings, got jammed. Floated to short right. Lowe charges in, dives, and can't make the catch. It bounces away down the line. Tavares scores. Young digs for third. The throw on a hop, the tag. No, he's safe. Young goes sliding in on a blooper end to right that scores Tavares and makes it 2-0 Rangers in the fourth in game two. He's at third for Evan Carter. First pitch, he swings, crushes it, right field, wall, gone! Evan Carter, the rookie, again! It's a two-run shot to right, and just like that, it is 4-0 Rangers in the fourth in game two.
Evan Carter, wearing Josh Hamilton's number, is part of the reason why that the Rangers swept the series. They win game two, 7-1. Afterward, Kevin Cash, Rays manager, was asked about the team being eliminated repeatedly.
This team has been very good in the regular season the past 3 years, underperformed arguably in the postseason all 3 years. Is there a common thread there? Is there something missing? Is it fluke?
You've asked me that 3 years in a row, and I don't know if I have the good answer right now. We're going to continue to work hard. I don't know if it's fluke or not. I mean, I think the guys that we had out there were able to do better than what we did today. We'd like to continue playing, but I can't put my finger on one specific thing that why we've been eliminated pretty quickly.
Rangers manager Bruce Bochy talked about Nathan Eovaldi, who pitched for Texas in game two with that long history of success in the postseason.
I'll say this. I mean, we had the right guy out there, and we had the right guy out there yesterday. What a job he did. He's really worked hard to get back to this point, you know, going on the IL and goes out there and pitched a just enormous game for us, and he's done that many times. So it all starts with that starting pitcher and sets the tone, and that's what he did for us today off a very, very good hitting ball club. So, you know, he's just such a tough competitor, and you saw it today.
You talked about Evan Carter.
And, of course, Carter, I mean, gosh, this young kid has come up, and I don't even know if he know that he's in the big leagues. I mean, this guy has such a calmness about him, and so it's good to have the depth in that order and the back end of the order do what they did today.
Yep, so all four series end in a 2-0 sweep. There's no baseball today. There's no baseball on Friday. We will have games on Saturday. Taylor, what's up? The Orioles have the first game, but the 1 p.m. game? What is that?
Buster, debacle in Baltimore. Billy Joel is playing at the Raven Stadium. If you don't know, the Raven Stadium and the Orioles Stadiums are right next to each other. He's playing at like 7 o'clock or something. The parking lots for that Billy Joel concert open up at 5. He's playing at 7, open up at 5. So if you're going to Baltimore, it's going to be a mess, unfortunately. So
Billy, are you going to go? They're back in the playoffs?
I wish, man. My foot's banged up. It's not really.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about your foot when I asked the question.
Yeah.
You're right. The parking lot being a mess, two events clashing up against each other. But it felt, when I saw the time that was set, 1 p.m., I was like, no respect.
No respect. Billy Joel does not respect the Baltimore Orioles, which isn't surprising as a Long Islander. So he probably likes the Mets or something. Go figure.
Well, and of course, this weekend we'll have the Twins facing the Astros, the Diamondbacks against the Dodgers in the Premier Series. The Phillies facing the Braves. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, new episode of the College Game Day podcast. We had Ryan McGee back in the hosting chair with Pete Thamel and Bill Connolly. A really great trio of guys there talking ball. Had a good discussion on the best team in the country. Are you thinking about that team in terms of their potential or their accomplishments? I thought it was a great conversation. I'm more of an accomplishment guy than potential, but they hash it out over there. You can listen on this platform that you're listening to right now or on YouTube.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. And Jeff, I've got a ton of questions for you. How are you doing on this Thursday, I think it is?
Is it Thursday? Yeah, I've lost track too. I'm doing great. I get to go home and drive my kid to a debate tournament this weekend. So it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be great. First question, though, I you know, as I was packing this morning in Philadelphia, you know, I'm completely sober, didn't have anything to drink last night. But my suit, I think the blood alcohol level of my suit would be at about a 0.40 because the Phillies, man, they celebrated hard. You know, they kept on rewinding this song that Kyle Schwarber likes, and he was singing along to it, and they're just pouring beer over his head, just two by two by two by two with champagne mixed in as well. What's the most doused you've ever been in your time in a championship clubhouse?
Was in Milwaukee, I believe, and Mike Moustakas, who I had got to know as he was coming up in Kansas City, and I lived in Kansas City, would not stop just absolutely crushing me. It to the point where it ruined the suit. And when I had an Allen and Ginter baseball card made up of me, and they wanted something for the relic, like, you know, to take a piece of something and put it as an insert in the card, I used my ruined Mike Moustakas doused suit. And so if you have one of those baseball cards, it has like what looks like some navy fabric. That's what it's from. It still smelled like champagne 5 years later. It was the grossest thing I've ever seen.
So the worst I ever got it, I mean, last night was bad, but the worst I ever got it when the Astros won a wild card game in Yankee Stadium, and Carlos Correa in his rookie year saw me and just emptied one or two bottles of champagne over my head. And I, you know, lived in Westchester at the time. And as I'm driving home, I'm like, oh my God, if I get stopped, if I get stopped, I am in such trouble, not only because of the reek of the champagne on me, but the explanation to the cop would have sounded so ridiculous.
Of course.
You know, I was just in the Astros clubhouse. Yeah, that's where I was. And one of their star shortstop dumped a bunch of champagne on me. I promise, officer, I'm sure that's exactly what happened.
Here's the thing. You would have been the first person ever to ask for a breathalyzer, right? And you would have, and you would have been okay then. Like, you would have, your far-fetched story may have actually made sense at that point.
Maybe or maybe not. I don't know how much alcohol could seep through your skin because I was just so saturated.
Is there like a contact drunk? I know there's a contact high, but can you actually get drunk? Is your skin permeable enough?
Well, if there is, then I take it back. Maybe I am drunk after being in that Phillies clubhouse last night. Oh my gosh. Those guys hit it hard and well deserved. All right, I get so many questions from these first round sweeps. And first off, why first round sweeps? 4 for 4? Because I've got my theory. I want to hear your explanation.
Well, my explanation is it's baseball, so I'm very curious to hear what your explanation is.
Well, my explanation is I actually think, having covered now two years of this, I actually think that momentum in these series, kind of like if in a wild card game, it always felt like getting ahead. That old cliche means something.
Yeah.
It has felt the last 2 days, it felt last year, like the team that gets ahead, all of a sudden, the team that's behind, they get so defensive.
Just tightens up. Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
You know what? I can see that. Here's the thing, though. I feel like even a 5-game series, that would be the case as well, though. Like, it's just winning game one is a really imperative thing to do when you're in a short series. It doesn't mean you're going to win the series necessarily, but it puts you at such an advantage. It allows you to not play the game where you're just facing 27 outs left in your season. Like, think about how John Schneider managed yesterday compared
to game
one. Yeah. I mean, it's just a completely different mindset when it's a win or go home game.
Okay, so tell me about your view and tell me why John Schneider, in your eyes, you know, made this decision. 47 pitches in, Jose Barrios on the mound, pitching against his former team in Minnesota. I thought it was a great choice to line him up for game two, because you and I have seen so many examples where guys working against their former teams get a little extra adrenaline. Yeah. And I wasn't watching the game live, but to read about it afterward, what a head scratcher. What did you make of it live as it happened?
Barrios was pitching really well. And here's the thing. You know that Jose Barrios is on when that slurve he's commanding it to both sides of the plate. And that's the thing. He was working the slurve yesterday. And it's one of those decisions, Buster, that I ran it by a bunch of front office people yesterday, because this was a front office influence decision. We know that, not out of any like sourcing. It's because we know now the modern relationship between the front office and the manager is that quite often the front office will just tell the manager what to do or how to approach things or what the expectations are for the script of the game. And it's why it saddens me that some autonomy has been taken away from the manager, because you know, when managers don't get to use their feel, when they don't get to see with their eyes what's going on the field and say, you know what, I'm going to ride with that. I'm going to overrule that because I have seen this before. I know my players. I especially know my pitchers. It's just a matter of being so defensive now. It's almost an extension of starting pitchers not being asked to throw more than 100 pitches. It's just this natural inherent defensiveness. And I understand the third time through the order rule. Jose Berríos barely got through the order the second time. And the idea of bringing in a new look and someone in Yusei Kikuchi, I get it fundamentally. I understand that Kikuchi was actually like maybe their best starter. Yeah, I understand the math, and I understand Yusei Kikuchi is a really good pitcher. But man, I just one base runner is all it takes. Like there is an aesthetic element to the game that gets totally lost with this. And if your moves, even if they are mathematically correct, backfire, you are going to lose your fans over this, because nobody go back to Blake Snell. Yeah. I mean, still all these years later, still the questions about pulling Blake Snell in the World Series when he was pitching as well as he was, and that was in like the sixth, seventh inning, right? Like that was much deeper into the game than this. I thought it was a waste and unfortunate. And frankly, Buster, it was the proper end to a Toronto Blue Jays season that was so incredibly underwhelming that there need to be changes there, because what they've got now, it ain't working.
So I've come to view the scripting out of going into a game and the adherence to that as being a really dumb decision by really smart people. Because how many times have you and I through the years talked to a pitcher who goes out to the bullpen to warm up before the game, and he says afterward, you know what, I didn't feel good in the bullpen. I had a great slider. I didn't have a good fastball. There are so many variables that go into how a pitcher's performing. The idea that for an 8 o'clock game, you're going to sit down at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and know that you can just lay it out what's going to happen that night is insane. And that's why, your point, I agree with you. You need a manager who can watch what a pitcher's doing, watch what's going on with the staff, and have a feel for the guy and say, I'm going to break away from that. I got to tell you, like last night, watching Aaron Nola, given his general performance this year, you could see a front office saying, you know what, if you get 5 innings out of Aaron Nola, run, right? But no, Rob Thompson, Caleb Cotham watched Aaron Nola last night. They watched how he's filling the strike zone with that slider, and they stuck with him. Yes?
100%. And good for them. Good, you know, not just good for them for sticking with him, and I'm sorry, but that is a loud truck that needs a new muffler behind me. You know, it's not just sticking with him, Buster. It's being emboldened to make that decision. That's the part of it that I give Dave Dombrowski. Yes. I give Dave Dombrowski, Sam Fold, a lot of credit for saying, you know what, Topper? Like, you go do your thing. You manage this team. You manage your players. You put them in the best position to win, because in the moment, you know better than we do. We can give you all of this information and we can tell you what we believe is going to happen. But in the moment, only you know best, and that's why you are managing this team. So go out and actually manage it. Don't just push the buttons that hours ago we told you to push.
You mentioned the Blue Jays in the upcoming offseason. I completely agree with you. I wonder if the last moment, the last memorable moment we're going to see with Vlad Jr. in a Blue Jays uniform is going to be getting picked off second base, because he is barreling very quickly toward that, you know, that that tipping point that we saw with Cody Bellinger in recent years with the Dodgers. You know, that we've been talking about potentially with Pete Alonso, where you get a first baseman, you get a corner slugger, a guy who, you know, isn't a good defender. He clearly is not a good base runner. He's not adding anything there. Make $14 million this year. He's probably going to be close to 17 to 20 for next season. And you wonder if the Blue Jays, after this disappointing season, are going to say, you know what, we have to start turning things over. And there would be a market for Vladdy. What do you think?
Oh, no doubt. It's got to be a consideration. But let's remember, too, Buster, this is like two consecutive years where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has just been good. You know, he's been a good hitter who hits the ball really hard. He hasn't been one of the best hitters in the world. He hasn't been the guy who's finishing, you know, second to Shohei Ohtani in the MVP voting. And to see these years going by when he really is in his prime right now, like this is prime, mid-20s, should be hitting 40 home runs, driving in 120, batting 300, being the guy that we all know that he can be, and he just hasn't. And one of the reasons that I think the Blue Jays have underachieved to the level that they have is because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has underachieved to the level that he has. And it's really unfortunate, because this guy, by all accounts, should be a star. And right now, he's just a pretty good first baseman.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers might be a team interested. Heck, the San Francisco Giants in need of a big name.
Chicago Cubs.
100% now that Bellinger's leaving. Yeah, you could see a lot of teams. And look, I don't know how you felt about the handling of Alek Manoah this year, but that, for me, that was very symptomatic of what's going on with the Blue Jays, where he essentially goes, he's sent down the minor leagues. He's not suspended. He's not really dealt with. There were other players in that organization. Like, what are we doing here? You know, at some point there needs to be a standard of accountability within the organization. And I think that's what the players there will want to establish this winter.
Isn't it fascinating watching teams that get all the right pieces in place, Buster, and it just doesn't work? I mean, I feel like that's the San Diego Padres right there too. You have everything on paper that looks like it should be correct. And then, you know, in the Padres case, it fell apart. In the Blue Jays case, it just never really came together.
All right. So I was told that you have a piece coming out the next couple of days. I don't know what it's about. I should have asked you before we started. I was told, you know, that you have this article coming out. What's that about?
It's going to be a division series preview. And it's looking, listen, there is no secret sauce for the playoffs, but I do think there are certain things that great playoff teams have. They hit home runs. They strike batters out. They have good up the middle defense. And, you know, we've seen that from the Houston Astros in particular over recent years. And I think that's a big part of why they're winning, because they are always strong up the middle. They always hit the ball out of the park. You know, the one year that they didn't hit home runs was in 2021. They got out homered 11-2 in the World Series. And what happened? The Braves absolutely ran roughshod over them.
Is this series between the Braves and the Phillies going to be the best series of the postseason, do you think?
Yes. I wish it were seven games. It makes me sad that it's not. You know what's interesting to me, though? It's the way that the series are laid out in terms of the National League getting that extra day off after game one and what that does for the pitching staffs. The advantage for the Braves, I think, can be pretty significant, because they're going to get Strider and Freed twice, whereas in the American League, the Astros are going to get Verlander twice, but Framber Valdez only once, Christian Javier only once. And so being a National League team that's had some rest is a lot better. Zach Wheeler's only going to be, you know, Zach Wheeler's going to go twice, but they get Nola only once. And so Atlanta, I think, has the starting pitching advantage because of that, so long as Freed is actually healthy and can make those starts.
Yeah, and if he's actually right, you know, it felt like down the stretch there was some leaking there on, as there was in the past. Who are you picking in that series? Because I got to tell you, and I'm going to be completely guilty of recency bias, and you know this. You hang around a team for a few days, and you're like,
I know.
The team. I know. Yeah, I think it'd be very tough for anybody to beat the Phillies the way that Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola were rested by the coaching staff for the last 6 weeks. Six-man rotation paying off in a big way as we get into October.
307 home runs, 501 slugging percentage, best lineup I've probably ever seen. And I grew up in Cleveland in the 1990s, so that's a really high standard and threshold. If I'm picking against the Atlanta Braves, I'm doing so because I am falling prey to that very recency bias about which you're talking. And I have long tried to avoid recency bias, but it's the playoffs, man. Like, recency bias is a real thing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, the entire month is a small sample size. So I understand your pick, and I'm not going to say you're wrong. I think it's a total coin flip. But between the home field advantage and that extra start from Max Fried that the Braves might get, and, of course, that lineup being every bit as good and better than the Phillies lineup, I'm going with the Braves in a series to remember.
All right, before you go, give me quick thoughts. Diamondbacks beating the Brewers in two games.
Very surprising. It was interesting. I talked to the Diamondbacks player last night, and he said, I'm really glad that we weren't in Philly, because Milwaukee was a much easier place to play when we have the young guys that we do to get acclimated. And, you know, getting out to the advantages that Milwaukee did, you would think that they would be able to hold them. The Diamondbacks showed so much resiliency and moxie, a lot of respect for that team, whose talent, you know, on paper, they are not a match for the other three teams that are in their league. And yet we're an October buster, and weird things happen. And if I saw the Arizona Diamondbacks in the National League Championship Series, it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Was that the last game that Craig Counsell manages for the Milwaukee Brewers? And if you believe that, where do you think he winds up next year?
I do not believe that. I think he's going to stay in Milwaukee. This is not something that I am being told by sources. It's just a little feeling that I have. I think he's going to become the highest paid manager in baseball. Now, the question is, will Mark Adnazio do that? If Mark Adnazio, the owner of the Brewers, will make Craig Counsell the highest paid manager in baseball, that he will be in Milwaukee. But I think it's also going to be a matter of respect here. And, I'd like to think that after all these years of not being paid nearly what he should be, because he is a fantastic manager, that he gets his bag.
And at that point, if he does become that in Milwaukee, he becomes the most powerful manager in the sport, maybe supplanting Alex Cora, who I've thought of in recent years as maybe being that guy. All right, Rays Rangers, quick thought.
My World Series pick went down the toilet in a hurry. and it was recency bias there, Buster. Like, maybe I'm just a hypocrite, because I saw the way that the Rangers played over the last week of the season, gagging away the American League West crown and a week off. I'm like, this team, like, what are they made of? And then Jordan Montgomery goes and throws seven shutout, and then Nathan Eovaldi follows up with six plus brilliant, and their bullpen looked pretty good. And when you have Josh Young and Evan Carter hitting 8-9, earlier in the season, I said the Rangers have a lineup every bit as dangerous as any team in baseball. And while the Braves proved that to be not quite correct, I would suggest that after seeing the Rangers hit these last few days, man, they are dangerous and they are scary. And they're going to be a handful for the Baltimore Orioles.
The Rays, to me, are becoming like the A's were, 20 years ago with those Moneyball teams, where that during the course of the regular season, they had tremendous success. They get into the postseason.
Yep.
And I don't think there's a consistent thread as to why the Rays aren't winning in the postseason. I think this year, a lot of it has to do with injuries. Wander Franco, their best player, being taken off the field. I feel for those guys, because they've been better than the results they've gotten in the postseason.
Yeah, at the same time, at some point, you just got to win. At some point, you run out of excuses. Like, winning 99 games during the regular season is great. If you can't win one during the postseason, then those 99 don't mean a whole lot.
All right, Jeff. Thanks for doing this. Safe travels for you.
Thanks, Buster. I'm going to go have some breakfast with Rachel Ulrich now. She says hi.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing on this? What day is it? Thursday with no baseball ahead, Sarah, in October. What are you going to do with the day?
I know. I have no idea. I mean, I'm doing great, as always. Thank you. But, you know, I mean, the series was really fun. So excited for every team that advanced. But sitting here thinking two whole days without baseball all over again. The very, very scary preview of November. I don't want to start going down that road, so I'll find some good research to do, getting ready for the divisional round.
All right, I told Jeff that my suit would fail a blood alcohol test based on how saturated it was from being in the Phillies clubhouse. And I also mentioned that they kept on replaying this song that's apparently a favorite of Kyle Schwarber, just dumping champagne and beer over his head as they were playing, and they're singing as loud as possible. Look, we all have back in the day stories, Sarah. So I want to hear your back in the day story. What was your favorite drink? And if you were drinking, what would be the song you would have been singing to the way Schwarber was last night?
I mean, favorite drink would be a spicy margarita, but that's not really a clubhouse celebration there. I guess that would have to be a champagne, right? And as for singing, not the best singing voice ever, but I would sing absolutely everything. I mean, I can hear a song once and remember all of the lyrics, so almost whatever I would hear, I would be singing along, which is great because my go-to music, as I think I mentioned on here, is pretty much classic rock. So back in college, I never really knew the songs I was hearing, if we were going to parties or anything. But luckily, after hearing them once or twice, I kind of knew them, even if I wasn't listening to them on my own time.
So parts of your singing would be just sort of like you're just humming along with what you remember, right? With just the sound of the words, not the actual words.
Exactly.
Right. So, well, back in the day story, when I graduated from I took my last exam at Vanderbilt, and I finally graduated after a long haul trying to get enough money to finish. And I went out with friends, and there was a drink at that time called the Turquoise Blue, and I think I had six of them. I don't remember, though, Sarah. It was really ugly. Yeah, whatever the Phillies are feeling this morning, it was much better than the way I felt when I finished at school, that's for sure. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is two.
So speaking of one of the other teams that was celebrating yesterday, the Diamondbacks, they didn't just sweep that series. They came back from down multiple runs in both of those games. They're the fourth team ever in postseason history to win their first two games of a single postseason, despite trailing by multiple runs in both of those games. So the other teams to do that, the 2009 Yankees, 2008 Braves, and the 1956 Dodgers. So the first thing I thought of when I looked this up around the sixth inning yesterday was, oh my goodness, Evan Longoria just keeps being the storyline here. Think about that. He was a young kid, a rookie, on that 08 team with the Rays when they did that. And now he is the elder statesman guiding another young team, for the most part, to doing the exact same thing.
Number two is 24.
So last night, before all the alcohol you interacted with, the Phillies won their 24th game in the postseason at Citizens Bank Park. They're 24-11 at that ballpark in the postseason. That 86 winning percentage currently stands as the best record in the postseason for any team at any ballpark of all time, with a minimum of at least 20 games. And I don't even need that to tell me that. Certainly, over the last 2 years at the very least, you see that even on TV, even through my headphones, even just hearing how it's going in Philly. And it feels like they're 1,000-0. Even though I was there and witnessed them get no hit in that ballpark in the World Series, it still feels impossible to think they could lose in that ballpark in the postseason.
Number one.
Number one is three. Gotta talk about Bruce Bochy and the Rangers advancing in this series, where I think a lot of people did pick to raise their questions about that Rangers bullpen. The Rangers figured out the way to avoid any bullpen issues, which is hit a lot of home runs, score a lot of runs, and make it so the bullpen doesn't have to be pitching in key tight situations yet. So three is for the three franchises that Bruce Bochy has now won at least one postseason round with: the Padres, the Giants, and now the Rangers. He's the fourth manager to win a postseason round with three franchises, joining Bob Melvin, Dusty Baker, and David Johnson. Bochy has won 14 postseason rounds in his managerial career. The only managers with more: Joe Torre with 19 rounds won, and Tony La Russa with 16.
Yeah, Bochy, it's pretty cool to see the Rangers move ahead, knowing, you know, how much he was excited to get back into managing and, you know, to have another opportunity to pour champagne. And it's always funny, too, because he's such a nice person. And then you hear him with an edge in his voice, like when he's speaking to his players after they clinched. And, man, you get a sense of the competitive side of him. Sarah, you and I both picked the Phillies to win the World Series before the year started. Before the playoffs started, man, they were impressive the last 2 days. Give me your initial quick thoughts on a Braves and Phillies series.
I mean, I'm still feeling good about my pick. The Braves are going to be really tough. I'm really excited for this series. I mean, I love the kind of divisional rematch aspect, and the fact that even though the Braves were so much better in the regular season, we're kind of getting an at least crown, round two or something. But I think, the intangibles just all seem to go the Phillies' way. The pitching, as you said, when we talked before the playoffs, is so rested in such a better spot. We saw that with Aaron Nola going 7 scoreless yesterday, and Zach Wheeler 6 1/3 or 2/3 and 1 run the day before. I mean, they're set up so, so well. I have all of these concerns about the Braves pitching, and seeing how the Phillies are able to capitalize on opportunities, I really wonder. But I mean, I hope it goes the distance. I hope it's really well fought. No expecting it to be. And I'm really excited to see Ron Acuña Jr. in the postseason doing his thing. I mean, we've seen it before, but I feel like we forget how electric he can be in the postseason. This is the guy who is the youngest player in postseason history to lead off home run, and the youngest player in postseason history to hit a grand slam. He did that all a couple years ago, and he's been doing really incredible stuff since.
I can't wait. That series is going to be so much fun. Yeah. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this, and I will talk to you tomorrow.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday. Spence, Texas baseball fan. First of all, he's fired up for Rangers Orioles. He let me know that. And he also writes, "And Buster, what's more embarrassing, being a 3 seed losing to a 6 seed at home, or being a 4 seed and losing at home in front of only 20,000 spectators? If a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound, Buster?"
Yeah, it's the crowds of 20,000 people. Make sure you avert your eyes, right? Like, really, 20,000 people? I mean, that you get more for, indoor fireworks, I think, in Tampa Bay than for a playoff game.
Yes. Oh, really enjoying the grave dancing today for the Rays and the Blue Jays. Does Vladimir Guerrero Jr. have a playoffs problem that he should address?
Well, right. That's exactly what I said. If he'd had a bad playoffs, and all of a sudden it's starting to become a thing with him. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, 3 times, that the Blue Jays go out, he doesn't perform. It becomes a thing, even if it's not necessary in its small sample size. But when it happens over and over and over again,
it becomes a thing, especially when you're a star player.
And especially when you bomb out of the playoffs last year and say, this is just the trailer, next year's the movie. Another bad ending in that movie for Vlad.
Well, I didn't remember that. I did see the pickoff, and that was like, what in God's name are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, it was great. I loved it. Zach Beeson writes, and Buster, with the 2020 World Series mess with Blake Snell almost getting swept in the 2021 ALDS, swept in the wild card round in 22 and 23, which one ends first, the 2023 MLB Fall League season or Kevin Cash's tenure as Rays manager?
I don't know. How are you going to... Kevin Cash is like a finalist for American League Manager of the Year. Like, I get it if you're a frustrated Rays fan. But, I mean, think about all the players that they lost. Like Randy Arozarena down the stretch, he got hurt. They take, as we talked about, Wander Franco, you know, is taken off the field because he's being investigated for these inappropriate relationships. You know, they lost, you know, two or three other guys. I mean, they got hammered by injuries.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like an excuse. You know, and people have hammered the Yankees for doing that, the Mets for doing that, with like Edwin Diaz getting hurt in spring training. But you know what? That's real. Those are star players taken off the field.
Yeah. And to their, you know, to the Rays' credit, like, they chugged along all year. Like, the Jays were up and down, but the Rays, I mean, they got off to that amazing start, but like, I mean, they were winning like 17 games a month. Like, that's a pretty impressive clip.
Kevin Cash a problem. Come on.
Yeah, no. DC Trombley writes in, all the talk about Correa's play versus Jeter, and to me, it's not close. Jeter made an amazing play because he anticipated it. Correa had to make an amazing play because he was out of position on the air, and Bo almost caught his mistake. Yeah, pretty nice.
I wouldn't say Carlos was out of position. Like, the third baseman made a mistake, and he raced over. But I was very careful yesterday when we talked about this. This was the perspective of Roy Smalley, you know, who tweeted out that he thought they were comparable plays. I was there for the Jeter play in Oakland. I think the Jeter play is one of the greatest that I've ever seen. I don't think it's close.
Okay.
For the shortstop to wind up on the first base foul line, making a 20-foot flip to the catcher, That to me is a tougher play than a shortstop ranging in the shortstop hole.
Makes sense to me. Gregory Gosnell, Carl's Jr. 9982 writes, and why wouldn't the 6-seed Diamondbacks play the 1-seed Braves? I'm sure I ask you this every year, Buston, but what's your stance on reseeding?
Boy, it doesn't it feel like this year you'd love to have some way the Braves could face the Diamondbacks?
Yep.
Just to hold off the Phillies Braves series. I mean, I'm selfish. I want to see Phillies Braves be 7 games.
Oh, yeah.
Because that series, if it happens, it is going to happen in 5 games, but in a 7-game series, it would be even more epic. I can't. That series is going to have so much, especially with two teams that play each other in the same division.
Elizabeth Hart at eHart Tweets writes in a very simple question.
Oh, I didn't really answer the question. Yes, I'd be okay with a reseed.
I thought it was implied. All right. Clear as day for Gregory. eHart tweets, Elizabeth Hart. She writes in, a very simple question for you. Why are the Blue Jays? And a question for Taylor, is there a free seat on the Orioles bandwagon? There is a seat on the bandwagon, but there is no ticket for Elizabeth to the parade if we win the World Series. So, important distinction.
Man, we've had so many conversations this fall about clubhouse culture. Isn't it amazing? Mm-hmm. You know, in this analytic era, I mean, you read the stories about the Giants, and, you know, we talked about on the podcast, according to The Athletic, you know, you had Giants players playing board games, you know, in the time leading up to games. You know, the White Sox this year, Keenan Middleton, the reliever, talking about how he saw a guy in the bullpen sleeping, and you just asked, hey, Keenan, you know what you could do? Wake him up. and then, you know, with the thing with the Blue Jays this year, there's a lot of stuff out there among players that the Blue Jays have a really laid back attitude, and you wonder, you know, the handling of Alek Manoah, where they sent him to the minor leagues and he basically says, no, I'm not going to do that. And then they don't discipline him. I don't understand that. I suspect there's going to be a lot of conversations in the Blue Jays organization this winter about culture.
Thanks for reminding me about Alek Manoah. I love that train wreck, too. This is great. We won't address this.
You what?
I love the train wreck of Alek Manoah. Thanks for reminding me about that. Another thing to laugh about this morning. Brian.
Well, I don't mean to laugh at him. I was, yeah. Okay.
I'm laughing at him, not Buster. Brian Roll, he brings up Vladdy and the movie thing again. We'll go to PK Steinberg to close it out. He writes in, was Michael A. Taylor one of the best signings last offseason? It gave the Twins and the oft-injured Buxton so much defensive reliability in the outfield.
I agree. And you knew this with the pitchers that they, the staff, I remember having a conversation. I think we played it on the podcast. Sonny Gray talking about the outfield defense and how, you know, they had layers to it. So if Buxton was out, then you'd have Michael A. Taylor who could play. It seemed like it was a focus all year for the Twins. And by the way, you know, I mean, I got to own it. Before going into that, that Twin series, I thought, boy, I don't know if Carlos Correa is going to be okay. He's been out a couple weeks, plantar fasciitis. Man, is he a big stage player or what? That guy, he reminds me so much of Derek Jeter, you know, who I covered, but as someone who just loves flying in October. You know, if there could be a current Mr. October, for me, it would be Carlos Correa.
Ooh, excited to see the Twins play in the divisional round. Been a long time for them. Getting excited for games here. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets. Not while you're watching games tonight, because there's no games tonight. There's no games on Friday. So give us your thoughts on the divisional series. And we will be back tomorrow. I believe that is the tentative plan.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Jeff, Sarah, Bruce, Sarah, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin and color is something we need to fight against every single day.